Great to see so many people here on what is not just the best day of the week, but the year, if not the century. And you've decided to come here, and not least to say thank you to Professor Greenslade and his lovely wife, Noreen, who have come all the way down from Remelton today. They split their time between Donegal and Brighton. And I was watching the Olympics last night, and I thought, if Professor Roy Greenslade was in the Olympics, what sport would he participate in? And then I was watching the GB women's hockey team, and I thought it would have to be that. You could just see him in a skirt. But seriously, no, he's got all the skills required. He's aggressive. He's skillful. He's hard-hitting. He's not afraid to wield a big stick. And being a blogger for The Guardian, of course, his position would be left wing. But Roy, the one thing about him, apart from the fact that 10 years ago he absolutely crucified me in an audit of a programme that I did for the BBC, is that he is objective on the basis that he's worked for, I think, at least written for every single daily national newspaper in GB. And most of the Sundays as well as editing the Daily Mirror. And, of course, as an editor, I take it you're in charge of the horoscopes as well. So what we want you to be this afternoon, for the next 30 minutes before we ask you questions, is to be Mystic Meg. Look ahead to the Leveson Inquiry report, which I think is going to be later this year. And Roy, just answer one question in the next 30 minutes on behalf of the press here in Belfast. Are we doomed?
Well, I'll do yes to that straight away. Yeah, it'd be great. Yeah, lectern's always good, I think. Just to shuffle papers. I ought to say straight away that when I was last here, I spoke about how newspapers in England are have never treated Ireland very well. And that they have generally, you'll hear me, don't worry, I have a loud voice. I wrote about how, I think I spoke when I was here about the tame reliance on official sources and about bias, and the influence of the police on journalists and bias, and the failure to investigate collusion and bias. And the acceptance of Secret Service dirty tricks without too much trouble. Did I mention bias? Anyway, I'm biased. And so it is no surprise, I think, to us that these newspapers that were willing to do that when dealing with this particular part of the world should have got themselves into trouble. And that is exactly what phone hacking has done. Really quick recap of phone hacking. In 2005, the young royal princes, Harry and William, discovered that their phones, or suspected their phones had been hacked. An investigation took place. The arrest of the News of the World's royal editor, Clive Goodman, and a person called a private investigator, who was in fact contracted to the paper on £100,000 a year, Glenn Mulcair, were arrested. And in the following January, in 2007, they were sent to jail, one for 3 months or four, one for 6 months. And yet, when they went for trial, apart from the charges involving intercepting the voicemails of the princes, clearly they had also intercepted, were accused of intercepting others, or Mulcair was, including Elle Macpherson, an actress, and Gordon Taylor, who was chairman of the Professional Footballers Association. And we found that incredibly baffling. After all, why would the royal editor be interested in an actress? Why would he be interested in, indeed, in a chairman of the Professional Footballers Association? But to be absolutely honest, we couldn't move on this story. We couldn't really shape that in any way. The people went off to jail, and the story was largely silent for 2 years. But beavering away, unbeknownst to me, was one of my Sussex neighbours, Nick Davis of The Guardian, who was receiving information which suggested that, in fact, phone hacking had not been confined to Clive Goodman, not being confined merely also just simply to this instance of Glenn Mulcair's attentions, but had taken place on a large scale, industrial scale, we call it. In 2009, he felt confident enough in July 2009 to publish a story which the editor of The Guardian, Alan Rusbridger, also felt confident enough to splash in the paper, saying, on the basis of the evidence he'd built up, that there had been phone hacking on a vast scale at the News of the World. Immediately, the News of the World's publisher, News International, part of Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, said, this is absolutely nonsense. There was one person involved in this, and this became what we now know as the rogue reporter defence. It was one person, nothing else had happened, the rest of the paper were absolutely fine. Davis was not perturbed. He just kept writing stories and writing stories. But at the same time, each time he wrote a story, the News of the World would say, not only do we say it's a rogue reporter, but go and ask the Metropolitan Police. And the Metropolitan Police kept saying, there is nothing to Nick Davis's allegations. They are complete nonsense. He put them in front of a Commons Select Committee, and the Commons Select Committee thought there's something definitely to this, but they couldn't do anything because the Metropolitan Police said no investigation is going forward, there was nothing in those documents at all. And then a document was leaked to Nick Davis which showed that at least two other people in the office had been definitely involved in phone hacking, and still the newspaper maintained a sense of innocence. And it wasn't until the great breakthrough happened, the huge breakthrough, last July, when Nick Davis revealed that the phone of the murdered 13-year-old girl Millie Dowler had been hacked, that the world took off. There was pandemonium. Suddenly, within a week, the whole world changed. The world changed because in no time at all they realised that something really was up. And I just want to catalogue what happened in that little period of 2 weeks in July last year. It's always worrying when you get blank pieces of paper and a speech like that, isn't it? And you know you're turning over and you're not going to find it. The important thing about that was that within a week, I know it anyway, the leading police officer of Britain, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, was forced to resign. One of his senior officers was forced to resign. Rupert Murdoch had to give up on his Be Sky Be bid, one of the largest media operations in the world. Two News Corporation executives had to resign, including the chief executive of News International, Rebecca Brooks, and a whole series of civil litigation began because the police were forced at last to open the Mulcair evidence, which showed that hacking, that there were 6,000 victims of hacking. 6,000. So I'm just going to do a quick factual bit before I go back in time to explain this, in order just to show you how incredibly serious this is. On Tuesday this week, a Sun journalist was arrested, along with a Sussex police officer, on conspiracy to corrupt and conspiracy to cause conduct in a public office. And a Scotland Yard PR explained that they were related to suspected payments to a police officer. And what's happened is that the hacking inquiry has widened out into an inquiry into computer hacking and an inquiry into payments by journalists to public officials, mainly the police and sometimes the army. So, in the last 12 months, there have been 70 arrests. Only 13 people have been formally charged so far, and they include Rebecca Brooks, and they include her predecessor as editor of the News of the World, Andy Coulson, who's very important to this whole story because he also happened to be David Cameron's communications director. Coulson faces 5 counts of conspiracy to intercept communications without lawful authority, and Brooks faces 3. 5 of the paper's senior staff face similar charges, as does the famous, infamous private investigator Glenn Mulcair. In all, these eight face 19 counts of intercepting communications involving the hacking of more than 600 people. Separately, Brooks, her husband, her PA, her chauffeur, oh yes, we have chauffeurs, and two security men at News International face trial on a charge of conspiracy to pervert the course of justice. Coulson, quite separately, also faces a charge of perjury in Scotland. I'm not going to go into that. In fact, I'm not going to refer to these people by name again because I have no wish to prevent them having a fair trial. You may think it, by the way, blackly ironic that former tabloid journalists are at the moment belly-linking about the possibility of not obtaining a fair trial due to press coverage. You may think that, but I couldn't possibly comment myself. Anyway, there are still 60 people on police bail, and I don't want to find myself in contempt of court, and I do want them to have as fair a trial as possible. But I just recount that because it shows how serious the whole affair has been. I just want to go back to what happened after the explosion of this in July last year. You'll recall that immediately, the most important thing was, here we had a Prime Minister who was hugely embarrassed. Hugely embarrassed. He had, despite private warnings, taken on Andy Coulson to become his Director of Communications. We now know that Andy Coulson wasn't even properly vetted before he had the job and was able to see communications which would need vetting. So Cameron found himself in that amazing week of July, resignations of policemen, the closure of the News of the World, forced on Rupert Murdoch by a rebellion of advertisers and thousands of readers' complaints. Cameron thought, what do I do? How do I get out of this? And he did what all prime ministers do. He thought, I'd kick it into the long grass. I'll create a judicial inquiry. So he set up a judicial inquiry under the under Lord Justice Leveson, Sir Brian Leveson, who it turns out to be an absolutely charming chap. It also meant that the Commons Select Committee realised that they'd been lied to. And MPs absolutely hate that, because, as you know, they're all very straight. So they reopened their inquiries and called before them in what must be one of the great set-piece moments in the history of the media. They called before them Rupert Murdoch, who said, "This is the most humbling day of my life." And, of course, for his trouble, then got a pie in the face, which was shaving foam. His son, James, head at the time of News International, was forced to turn tail and leave Britain. Now, I see that this week, the Church of England has actually disinvested in News Corporation by selling off its 1.9 million shares. Now, you might ask, it's fair to ask, I think, why did they have them in the first place? But don't get me started on religious hypocrisy, or we'll be here for days. Anyway, back to the unfolding of events. In order to salvage its reputation, News Corp set up an internal task force at its whopping London headquarters called the Management Standards Committee. And their job has been to sort of work with the police. They're supposed to protect journalist sources while at the same time giving information to the police about all the emails, millions of emails, which might reveal bad behaviour by staff. And that's given rise to, I mean, this is just amazing. It's given rise to four separate Metropolitan Police investigations. One into phone hacking, Operation Wheating, which has got 96 police staff, 24 arrests so far. A second into computer hacking, including Trojan emails, that's Operation Tulita, 19 officers. Then, one of the biggest is Operation Elverdon, staffed by 70 officers, and that's investigating these inappropriate payments to public officials. 43 arrests have taken place in that so far. And the fourth one, Operation Kalnik, which we knew nothing about until February, when the Metropolitan Police Deputy Assistant Commissioner Sue Ackers revealed its existence in front of Leveson. That's an offshoot of the computer hacking inquiry, and it's got a Northern Ireland angle because it involves the hacking of Ian Hurst, a former British Army intelligence officer who worked undercover inside the IRA under the pseudonym Martin Ingram. You might know him as the author also of Steak Knife. One person has been arrested for that. You might share with me, think it a bit rich, that a spy complains about being hacked, but I'll leave that there as well. In addition to those four Metropolitan Police investigations is a fifth in Scotland, Strathclyde Police, called Operation Rubicon, in which 50 officers are inquiring into allegations of phone hacking, breach of data protection and perjury. It's that that led Coulson to be charged with perjury. I'll do the maths for all of that. 235 police officers staffing five major criminal investigations have arrested 73 people, 13 charged. You'd have to say that British journalists appear to have crossed a Rubicon. Meanwhile, apart from these criminal matters, are all the civil cases. More than 100 people have launched cases against News Corporation. Thousands have paid out. Sienna Miller got 100 grand. Andy Gray was not as pretty as her, only got 20 grand. Many sums paid to politicians, footballers, wives of footballers, sportsmen, actors, singers, their parents, their secretaries, their agents. Compensation paid to the mother of a 7/7 London tube bombing victim, a grieving husband of a murdered wife was hacked, other bereaved people. By March this year, News International had paid out settled 55 claims. It had paid $2 million alone to Millie Dowler's family, and has paid out, we think, many of these are undisclosed sums, vast sums since. And of course, they paid out before that $700,000 to this chairman of the Professional Footballers Association, Gordon Taylor. And it was that fact, that single fact, hidden away, kept secret. Gordon Taylor never revealed it. He kept stumm. It was that single fact that alerted Nick Davis in the first place. Now, I think the final bill for Murdoch's company will be, well, I actually wrote down last night, it will be 200 million. And just as I was going to bed, checking my computer, up popped the News Corporation annual figures. Full year figures up to June this year. So I now know that my 200 million guesstimate was way too low. In the company's statement to investors is included a £143 million charge related to the ongoing investigations, an £80 million charge to settle legal action. So that's £223 million before we even get to the fact that costs associated with closing the News of the World, consequent loss of revenue, have also added millions. So there's a kind of that's what happened in terms of hacking. Let me just move on to how this extraordinary state of affairs first came about. Overarching everything is the inescapable fact that London-based national press, about 20 titles, have been intensely in a rival situation throughout their existence. And that's unlike anywhere in the world. There's nowhere else in the world that has that kind of national press concentrated in one place, all fighting each other. And they fight each other to get higher audiences, or better quality audiences sometimes, in order to exert cultural, social, political, and commercial influence. And the second truth is, inescapable, going back to your doomed mark, is that all of them are losing sales at a fast rate. Advertising revenue fallen off a cliff because of the recession, sales generally down, migration to the internet, and feeding. So it would be unfair, I think, or at least too simplistic, to say that this dire commercial reality is the reason for hacking. But of course it's played a role, because I think owners, but particularly Murdoch, because of the way his company is run, have been willing to turn a blind eye to what actually goes on as long as sales, and therefore profits, can be maximised. One of my students, and needless to say she got a very high mark, in her end of term essay said, "Most ethical dilemmas in the media are a struggle between conscience and revenue." Struggle between conscience and revenue. Whoa. In which, not in the BBC's case, in which, of course, revenue generally wins out. Now, I know that journalists have never had a good reputation. We are portrayed in film and books and all sorts of really unscrupulous, you know, we'd sell our grandmother's false teeth for a good story and all that. That's how we're constantly portrayed, men in grubby macs and so on, make life miserable for everyone around them. But with hacking, of course, the fiction has been turned into fact. Now, I'm not naive. I've spent 48 years in journalism. As Mark told you, I've worked for every single newspaper. I was a long time on The Sun. I know how journalism works. And I think I know how News of the World journalists overstep the mark. We as journalists, are really groomed to think of ourselves as somehow special. We don't need... This is Fleet Street. Of course, not Mark. Mark's a great... despite what I must have said some time ago.